This is Louisa Beal with Radio Tacoma, and I'm here today with Hunter Henderson, who is, my gosh, he's got an amazing resume, and I'm eager to talk with him. But let me give you a little background first. He graduated from the UW-Tacoma in 2013, majoring in environmental studies with a minor in restoration ecology and Hispanic studies. He then went back for a master's in public administration with an emphasis in environmental policy. After graduation, he served Pierce County Parks and Recreation as an AmeriCorps member. He also helped Tacoma Tree Foundation distribute over 2,000 trees and shrubs in Pierce, Thurston, and King County. He also established a Western Bluebird Monitoring Program in Pierce County Parks. So he has been all over the place with this. You did make it, and you made it into college and graduated in environmental studies. Is that right?
Yeah, I did environmental studies because, well, to be frank, I am not that good at math. I'm not saying I can't do math, but I'm not that good at it. So I chose environmental studies over environmental sciences.
Okay, so what's the difference then between the two?
Well, environmental studies is a Bachelor of Arts, whereas environmental sciences is a Bachelor of Science.
Ah.
And so what the difference between those two programs is, environmental studies is a lot more interdisciplinary and allows me to focus on many aspects of the environment that have connections to actually how the environmental ecosystems function. And environmental science, on the other hand, well, for one, it involves a lot more math. And they really are capable of processing data, doing laboratory experiments, and they're more focused on the hard aspects of the science behind that, the actual chemistry, the biology, the physics. And so they don't get to spend as much time on focusing on the human aspect of the environment. And humans play a large role and how our environment continues to exist today, as anthropomorphic effects have the largest impact on ecosystem function.
And it sounds to me that, with what I know of you, it's that human aspect that is so vital for us to understand and to work with.
It really is. In my studies, I learned there was a separation of man from the environment at some point in time, where man stopped thinking that they are part of the environment and started thinking they are a part from the environment. That means separate from the functioning and interactions of ecosystems. And so really, as an environmental studies person and someone who focuses on restoration ecology, I want to bridge that gap between a functioning ecosystem for which billions of dollars of ecosystem services are now being calculated. For example, the pollination work that bees and butterflies do. Where would we be without the pollinators? Our crops that we enjoy every day would not be sustainable, would not have the same yields. And so as an environmental studies person, it's my job to bridge the gap between human ecospheres and environmental ecospheres, because really, we all rely on each other to function as one whole ecosystem. And so I really try hard in my daily life to teach people about that and to exemplify that. In fact, I just got some native leafcutter bees from Crown Bees, which is a local Washington business that promotes solitary bees such as mason bees and leafcutter bees and carpenter bees, because they are more efficient at pollinating plants than honeybees are. So I really want to support the ecosystem, and I do that every way I can.
Well, that's just fascinating, because a lot of times people just think, well, you know, a bee is a bee is a bee, but that's not the case. And I know there's certainly been a decline in honeybees, and if we can make that up with mason bees and leafcutter bees, that would be so, so cool.
I think so, too. And the one benefit about these mason bees and leafcutter bees is, since they don't produce honey, they don't produce the toxin that would cause most people to go into anaphylactic shock. These bees that I got today, they are smaller than a half an inch. They almost look like flies unless you got close to them and saw that it was indeed a bee.
Yeah. Well, that's an amazing example of what you do. And it seems to me that you've taken it to the next level with your master's in public administration. Because again, you know, it's like you can have a lot of knowledge about all of the environmental systems, but then what do you do with that knowledge?
Yeah, it's really a challenge right now, because we do have the knowledge and we are accumulating data at a rate like never before due to technology that's able to quantify how much these services are worth from the ecosystem. The problem that I'm finding right now is that our policies that we have today were written by a community of yesterday and not focused on, for example, people who are historically underserved, like minorities. And so there are many environmental injustices that have happened due to policies being made by, I'll just be frank, probably old white guys. And so what we need today are policies of the future that can make us future resilient and allow us to push the boundaries and protect things like our water, which I heard the Congress just repealed a bunch of water protections, like our air. We all need it to breathe. There are a lot of protections right now that are policies, laws that are being repealed in the sake and for favor of capital gain at the expense of quality of life for everybody.
Yeah. And there's just so much history that goes into the power structure that maintains that.
There certainly is. Institutional racism is definitely a thing. Practices like redlining still definitely exist today in our society.
Could you explain redlining? I mean, I've heard the term and I think I know what it means, but I would love more of a definition of that.
From my best understanding and definition, redlining is where real estate brokers and cities relegate zones for people to be allowed to purchase or not purchase. For example, if they wanted to make sure a neighborhood stayed demographically and predominantly white, they would not allow, or real estate brokers would not approve loans for minorities wanting to purchase homes in an area. And so what that does is force people of low income and minority status to be pinched into a neighborhood. And oftentimes those neighborhoods are lacking in environmental resilience. They have no tree canopy. They are often food deserts, which means there are no fresh available groceries within a walkable distance for people in those neighborhoods. And they're oftentimes the first targets to be displaced, for example, for a freeway that may go in, or a warehouse, or whatever developments may be happening that may be advantageous for some parts of a community, but not for others. And so it just really, the practice of redlining creates a gap of equity that really needs to be addressed, because without that wealth, without home ownership, without stability, the gap continues to grow between minorities and white people because they were allowed to purchase homes. One of the big examples I can think of is after World War II, soldiers were given the GI Bill. That was when they first rolled out with the GI Bill. And white soldiers returning home were allowed to buy homes and with their GI Bill and use veteran funds for that, whereas soldiers of color were not. They were excluded from that market. They were not allowed to buy homes. They were not given the money and the assistance as white veterans were. And so that history has had a long-lasting impact on communities of color and low-income people.
Oh, my. Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, it's like a lot of people don't understand. You know, it's like, well, you know, I'm not a racist, but supporting that power structure, you know, it just feeds right into it.
It really does. And no one needs to be attacked on the journey to healing. It's about recognition. It's about empathy and compassion. And without any of those three things, we can't really move forward on a positive foot, because there's still so much hurt to get over from people.
Kind of towards the beginning, you said what I'm thinking of as like the word of the moment. And for Tacoma, the word of the moment is warehouse. I'm sure you have something to say about that word and what it means and what's going on.
Oh, yes. Warehouse, warehouse, warehouse. There are so many of them going up. I understand a little bit about economics and the free market, and these warehouses are going up as a result of people's purchasing habits of getting deliverables online to their home. And I'll admit, I'm guilty of some purchasing online too, okay? But where I can, I go to a brick and mortar. And really what these warehouses are doing is going to be causing a gap. Here in Tacoma, I can think about three projects, warehouse projects, that have recently happened that have dramatically impacted our community. The first warehouse that really impacted Tacoma was off of our city limits, off of 84th and South Tacoma Way, the old Starlight drive-in movie theater.
Oh my God, yeah.
I remember as a kid going to that movie theater, to the drive-in, and after it shut down, it became a thriving swap meet for the Latinx community. Many people of that population struggle with finding traditional ways of income. And so this was a place for them to make a livelihood to gather, to be together, and to invite people in to see their culture, because there are open air markets all over Mexico and all over the world. And I recall that property being sold off and demolished for a warehouse that was empty for like 4 years or 5 years. And I thought, where did the people go? What happened to their livelihoods? I went there. I bought jeans. I bought electronics there. Mm-hmm. What happened to them?
Yeah.
And so the next example I can think of is the Tacoma News Tribune, which is in the Hilltop neighborhood, my home neighborhood. It was a 20-acre campus that got shut down and is now also a shipping center. Right now, in Washington State and all over the USA, there is a housing crisis. We have a projected 55,000 more people moving to Pierce County in the next 15 years that need homes. And we don't even have homes for them right now. So they're creating gaps, these warehouses, for housing. And that's just the social aspect. You know, I'm an environmental guy. So let me get down to some environmental aspects of that. Right now, as it stands, these companies, I mean, I'll touch on one more social thing. Hold on. So as these companies are introduced with semi-trucks, these semi-trucks are on our roads and they're tearing them up. And as a company, they are not responsible for the maintenance and the wear and tear on our roads. And if you live in Tacoma, you can know there's a pothole problem. And so these semis are actually just going to increase the amount of potholes. And those potholes will damage our cars. And when we file claims because the city didn't maintain the road and it messed up our chassis or our axles or popped a tire, that tax burden then goes upon us as residents. And so that ends my social portion of why they're bad, because we have high enough taxes here in Washington State, and I don't want to see taxes increase anymore. Because companies aren't taking accountability for the damage. And there are also low-wage jobs. They're non-union jobs. These aren't future resilient jobs for our people. I am tired of Tacoma being known as a lowbrow blue-collar town. We are the city of destiny, and we deserve better. Now, on to the environmental aspects of warehouses. These warehouses put in excess of 1,000 plus extra vehicles on our roads per day. Now, these vehicles help contribute to the urban heat island effect. They help contribute to emissions, which we breathe in. That gives us cancer. There's a great resource, the Washington Environmental Health Disparities Map, where any citizen can look up their neighborhood and see how exposed they are to harmful impacts from human use, whether that's emissions, urban heat islands, and these things end up causing cancer, which is a killer. And so there's really not a lot of good benefits for a resilient economy on these shipping warehouses. Most of them end up being Amazon, and Amazon is notorious for not treating their employees kindly and for massive layoffs with no unemployment to be had and people left empty-handed and looking for a place to work. This just isn't it. Recently, the city of Tacoma they approved the Bridge Industrial Project in South Tacoma, which, if you look at the environmental health disparities map, has a huge disproportionate amount of impact placed in that neighborhood. The lowest tree canopies, the highest emissions, the highest cancer rates. I recall being at a neighborhood council meeting in the South Tacoma neighborhood, and a lady who had recently given birth and had lived in South Tacoma for a while, she worked for the health department. She had told me she gave birth to her child like 3 or 4 weeks early, and she could only say it was because of the emissions from the neighborhood that her child was born early. And that really hit me. She had her baby there. The baby looked healthy. Praises be. But that won't become an infrequent occurrence if projects like these warehouses continue to go up in Tacoma. What makes the Bridge Industrial especially nasty is that they're paving over an aquifer. Mm-hmm. And as you know, in times of climate change and extreme heats, like I was born and raised here, and I remember summer rains as a child, and we don't have those anymore. The heat is getting hotter. We broke 108 degrees a few years ago. Mm-hmm. It has never been that hot before in my life. Events like that are going to get worse if we contribute and allow industries like what's happening at the Bridge Industrial Project, which was approved by our city manager and all of our council people, without further examination.
So is that a done deal now? Is there anything we can do in order to prevent it from going forward?
Honestly, at this time, the leadership of Tacoma, I just don't think they care, because there was community outreach done, and then the whole neighborhood was vehemently against the project, and yet they steamrolled over their wants and desires for their community. As a public servant, because I work for the state, that's just not acceptable. We have to listen to our communities that we serve. We are public servants, not private sector servants that allow for short-sighted development for small-term gains. And so at this point, I honestly don't know if it's stoppable. There is a lawsuit happening right now against the city, requiring a demand for an environmental impact statement, an EIS, because the permitters that be, and they are not scientific experts, they do not have bachelors of science, they do not understand that kind of data that would inform a decision. The principal planner decided that there would not need to be an environmental impact statement for that project for whatever reason. And my biggest beef, aside from that, is that there's no guarantee that this will provide high quality life and jobs for our community. In fact, I have a feeling it's going to be low end. It's going to increase the urban heat island effect. It's going to tear up the roads on South Tacoma Way. And it's going to pave over that aquifer under that ground. And that aquifer, in times of emergency, because not everybody drinks bottled water.
Or should.
Actually, yeah, that's a whole other can of worms we can do another radio show about.
Yeah.
But in times of drought, that aquifer is what's going to keep people alive and going to keep our ground green. and they're going to pave over it. They're going to eliminate oak trees, the Gary Oak wood trees, which according to the Fish and Wildlife, each have to be counted because they provide so much ecosystem benefit. A mature oak tree is its own ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. So what's happening? You said something about a lawsuit. Is there ways that people can chime in or support that? Or is there a group that, a local group working on this issue?
Well, the lawsuit is happening. It was filed with the South Tacoma Neighborhood Council with a law firm that fights for environmental justice. And so they have filed a lawsuit with the city of Tacoma, but as far as participating, I would honestly mail Shirley Schultz. She's the planner and permitter person in charge of this project. Mm-hmm. Mail the city council, especially my candidate opponent, Christina Walker, who was against the LNG plant, but then all of a sudden flipped to approving the LNG plant. Email those people and ask them where environmental justice is. Yeah. Ask them where the benefit for Tacoma is long term. Hold them accountable for their words and their actions. If they want a healthy, sustainable Tacoma, then I don't feel that permitting projects like the Bridge Industrial is the way to get it. We need homes, we need parks, and we need high quality jobs, not just beat up streets, more potholes, more pollution, and higher cancer rates.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you're on fire about this. So I understand that you have filed for the at-large position for the Tacoma City Council. Is that true?
Yes, I have. My name is Hunter Down Henderson, born in Tacoma, raised on the hilltop. I've lived here my whole life, and I plan to spend the rest of my years in the City of Destiny. I am running opposed to Walker and then some guy named Todd Brisk. And so I have an uphill battle, but I'm about data-driven decisions and research to make the best decision, an informed decision for our community and not just a knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah. Because it sounds like with your background in environmental studies and environmental policy, you're just made for this position.
I mean, I would think so. As a city that has all the capabilities of becoming sustainable and has all the resources that we need, like Tacoma has all the ingredients for greatness. We just have to use our ingredients in the right recipe. Yeah. And so I want to run to see Tacoma more sustainable. I want to help implement changes that will think seven generations beyond us, because life will continue and I want to make sure life has a good chance. So yeah. That's why I'm running.
Good for you.
You know, I would just like to add that I was born in Tacoma as a late birth baby and had trouble surviving as a youth. And I grew up on the hilltop in a low income family in a time where my neighborhood was dangerous still. Not that it still isn't today. But back when I grew up, it was a lot more dangerous, and I had to find my place safely in the world, existing in a system that didn't really see me having a future, because when I went to school, less than 50% of students from Tacoma Public Schools graduated with their high school diploma. And so many, many people my age were looked at as lost causes. And somehow I didn't slip through the cracks, but I know many that have.
Well, that's quite a history. So your website is Hunter4Tacoma. That's Hunter, the number four, Tacoma.com. And I'm hoping that people will reach out and that you will get some good groundswell going behind you. And I look forward to talking with you again in more depth about some of the policies and what's going on with the city council, because, you know, a lot of people stop paying attention. And I think that we need to kind of point out some of this.
There's definitely a call to action happening. The most important elections and decisions to me are local, because that's where we live. We live in the United States, but we also live in our towns, in our communities. And so if we aren't taking care to watch who's making the decisions for us locally, then we're going to end up lost in the sauce, as they say, of politics, bureaucratic red tape, backyard hand deals, and just overall a loss of trust between us and the community, mm-hmm. and the people that we elect to represent us. I'm just an honest guy. I want to bring everybody on my journey. And that's why when you go to my website, unlike my opponents, my website is in multiple languages, because I understand English can be a barrier to some people participating. And it's always good if you read another language to hear the language of your people, to know that you are considered and thought of. And so when you look at my website, you'll be able to see the languages of Tacoma. You'll be able to see people like you that I want to bring on to the journey with me to make a future resilient Tacoma, because that is our destiny. We are meant to be great. We have always been great. We just need to use what we got to greater use.
That's just a wonderful, wonderful sentiment. And I want to thank you so much for being with us and having your say. And I hope to talk to you again real soon. Thank you.
I appreciate you having me on, and bless the people of Tacoma. We can do this together. We are a community, and we can meet destiny face to face if we are in it together. And so I hope you guys check out my website and ask me questions. And I'll bring the data, because I'm about data-driven decisions. So let's talk about it. And if you want to know about something, I'll teach you. My personal information's on there. I'm a public servant and I want to be transparent. Just reach out, and I thank you for listening. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Hunter, for talking with me. And I want our listeners to be aware that on Tuesday, June 27th, there will be a rally at the Tacoma City Council meeting. That's at 747 Market Street at 5 p.m. Sign making starts at 4:30 p.m., so you can come with a sign or come ready to make a sign. That's Tuesday, June 27th, 747 Market Street. You can find more information at bit.ly/Tacoma Warehouse. Be there to stand witness, hold signs, give testimony. You can reach Hunter Henderson on his website, hunter4tacoma.com. That's Hunter, the number 4, tacoma.com.